Is anyone else just constantly worrying? I feel like it can't just be me, but I feel like worry should be my middle name. But I have recently discovered Cover My Bubble. Cover My Bubble are a family insurance company who started their business in memory of their daughter. When Lilybeth passed away, they didn't have any insurance and lost Emma's income into the family, which was very difficult. They are here to help families with affordable insurances such as life, critical illness, income protection, children's cover and bump cover. Yep, children can be covered too. Now Emma loves a question, so why not reach out to her at Cover My Bubble and let her help you. Hello and welcome back to my podcast, Tits, Tums and All Things Mum. I am your host, Lottie, and I am here to normalise normal parenthood and to show everyone that really, we're all just winging it. Join me and my amazing guests to make sense of the chaos and work through motherhood together. Hello and welcome back to Tits, Tums and All Things Mum. I'm here with the lovely Claire today from My Kinda Mum. How are you, Claire?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you. My voice is just about back after a week of no voice. But I'm good. I'm just coming off the back of celebrating my 40th birthday this weekend. So, mild headache, but other than that, all good. Thank you for having me.
Happy 40th. Is the voice 40th birthday party induced?
It actually disappeared just right before the party, which is brilliant. I had about sort of 70 people turning up for a massive party and couldn't really talk to anybody. So I just danced instead.
That's what it's all about though, isn't it? Exactly. After a big night out, I always end up with no voice because I think the decibels of my voice just increase massively when there's alcohol, and then I wake up with no voice the next day. But I hope you had a fab birthday.
Yes, thank you. It was epic. It was a really, really good one.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. So could you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Certainly can, yeah. So I'm a mum of two. I've got a four and a half year old girl called Lula Blue, and we've got a 1 year old called Raffy. Before doing this whole mum life thing, I used to be a broadcast journalist. So I used to read the news on the radio and was a news editor and all that kind of thing. And then I was a marketing manager for my partner's gym for 6 or 7 years. And then we had kids, and I thought I was going to be a lovely, yummy, mummy, stay-at-home mum, just really enjoy making sensory play activities every single day, all of that kind of stuff. And quite quickly found it quite boring and thought, no, I need to do something alongside this that's for me and that lends itself to being a parent at the same time. I was on Instagram, kind of following various other accounts, people doing different things. I started doing some baby-led weaning with Lula, and was coming up with some quite nice, healthy recipes. And I thought, I'll start by sharing these. I started out, I used to be called Feeding Their Futures. And it was all about healthy recipes for kids and babies, basically. Did that for a year or so, and then just started to branch out into just everyday mum life stuff. And the reaction to that was a lot bigger than the reaction to the healthy recipes, I can tell you. And I thought, oh, okay, I think people actually just want to talk about what it's like being a mum and talk about some of the bits that are hard, but also laugh about some of the bits that are hard. And so I just started to focus on that. Obviously needed to rebrand and became My Kind of Mum. And it just took off from there and sort of rocketed in the last year or so. And I've now got just the most incredible supportive community of mums who I love talking to every single day. To an extent it works alongside the children in that they give me inspiration for content every single day, but it has at the same time also become a full-time job now, one which I love. So
amazing. I absolutely love your page, and you can see why you've built such a big audience, because I feel like every video that you create, we're all just like, yeah, been there. Because I think as mums, there is so much that you feel like you're going through alone, but then you see someone pop up online talking about this problem and you're like, oh, okay, it's not just me. Like, there's other people going through this, and you almost kind of bond over that, going through those difficulties.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, it's been actually really therapeutic for me as well, because initially when I first started putting these experiences out there, you know, it comes with a little bit of trepidation of, you know, are people going to judge me for this? Are they going to think I'm a terrible mum? Mm. And actually, overwhelmingly, the reaction was people saying, oh, thank you for saying it. Mm. I feel like this too. The number of times people have just put the words, I feel seen. And that comment means everything to me, because that's exactly what I want to try and do, is help mums feel seen.
Yeah.
Because it is really isolating. And, you know, I don't have any family around me locally, haven't really managed to build up a big network of mum friends, and didn't do the NCT thing, so I haven't even got that. And it was really isolating. But yeah, every time I sort of put these observations out there, and not only thousands, but sometimes millions of people from around the world, you got people commenting from Germany and Saudi Arabia and Australia saying, oh yeah, me too. And it's like, oh, okay. This isn't just a UK thing either. This is an international thing that mums are experiencing everywhere. So
then a
community starts to form, you know, which is great.
Yeah, well done you. But you said that you get mostly a positive response, which is fantastic. But you have spoken before about the negative responses that you've had to some of your posts on there, and I get it, because I get them too. And it is really hard to like disconnect from them, because you try and look at all the positives, but actually the one negative will be the one that just kind of sits in your brain. But do you want to kind of just talk us through some of the negativity that you've had towards sharing the challenges of motherhood?
Yeah, I've had my fair share of trolls. It's almost always on the ones that go viral, the ones that sort of just sit within my community of followers. People already know the kind of stuff that I talk about and they love it. It's the ones that go viral and go into the multi-millions and go around the world. That's when you start getting the comments from people that haven't seen you before and don't understand your sense of humour. I've been called toxic I remember in one reel in the caption I said that my daughter talks incessantly, which is accurate. She literally does not stop talking sometimes. And sometimes you can't even form a thought in your head, let alone, you know, getting any of your own stuff done. I'll be trying to, you know, this job is quite a creative job, so I'll be trying to come up with ideas for things, and she's just in my ear all the time, which is great. She's a communicative young person, but I use the phrase, she chats incessantly, and someone was like, this is toxic, what a disgusting way to talk about your child. I feel sorry for your children.
Other people
not quite so aggressive as that, just telling me that you shouldn't focus on the negative, don't complain, you need to reframe everything.
Now that there is toxic. That is toxic.
Yeah, I mean, I think reframing is good, but you've got to talk about what's tough first before you can move on to reframing. You can't just be in the middle of experiencing something that's really tough and go, oh, la 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 la, I've got the opportunity to clean up all my kids' crap all day. I'm so lucky and so grateful. You know, you've got to have a bit of a whinge first before you can then say, all right, well, what's a solution that we can try here, and how can we make this better? So you've got to talk first. And then the other one is just being dismissed. And I did a reel specifically about this, which was one of the most viral ones I've had. If we dismissed everybody the way that we dismiss mums, because there seems to be this habit of people saying, oh, well, you shouldn't have had kids then. You know, if you talk about or share anything difficult, it's, oh, well, you know, you wanted kids.
Yeah.
And I just find it bizarre, because if we apply that same thinking to other examples, so in the reel, I sort of talk through some different examples, like your husband getting stuck in traffic on the way home and talking about how annoying it was. Well, you wanted to be a driver. You wanted to drive a car. Put up with it. You know, cherish every second of your journey. But just because you make a choice to do a certain thing, it doesn't mean that you have to find every bit of that wonderful.
Yeah.
Or not talk about the challenges. You know, that's how we find solutions, and that's how we, you know, offload stress and that kind of thing. So, just being shut down, people saying, well, because you wanted children, therefore you're not allowed to talk about the challenges of having children, which is bizarre.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I've had that comment as well. And I'm like, what are you actually talking about? Like, think about what you're saying right now, because you choose what job you have, for example. So does that mean because you've chosen that job, you cannot complain about a day's work? You can't go to work, have something difficult happen at work, but then just have to suck it up and just get on with it? Yeah, no, that's exactly not the case. You can complain about it, you can whinge about it, and then move on. And that's what mums are allowed to do as well. I don't know where this has come from, where we are so easily dismissed and we get all these comments online.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're British as well. The British, we love a moan, don't we? It's kind of what we do. So, yeah, I mean, obviously there are a lot of great bits as well to being a mum, just as there are a lot of great bits to your job or, you know, whatever other choices you make in life. But it's perfectly normal and okay and acceptable and actually healthy to talk about the difficult bits.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how do you feel when you get together with a friend, share a bottle of wine and just offload about, oh my God, they're doing my hair right now. And your friend says the same stuff. And by the end of it, you might not have necessarily solved any of the problems, but just being given the opportunity to offload is mentally freeing, you know.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
good for your mental health. So to tell people, you chose it, so you're not allowed to complain about it. It makes no sense to me. And I think it's quite unhealthy, and I think it's what leads to people feeling more isolated because they're sitting there, you know. Fortunately, social media now is becoming a lot more realistic. There's a lot more accounts like me, like Louise, Mum's Still Got It, etc., like yourself, who are talking about the challenges of motherhood and, you know, the fact that we don't all have picture perfect houses and we don't all look perfectly put together every day, and actually most of us are just bumbling through trying to survive day by day. But there are a lot of aesthetic kind of motherhood accounts as well, which have their value too. I like I love seeing the pretty houses and the lovely outfits and things like that, but you need that balance of both so that you don't start judging and comparing and putting yourself down and, you know, going into the depths of mum guilt because you haven't made a perfect sensory play tray this morning for your kids and, you know, done some pancake portraits of your children for breakfast. And I think we just have to be to be real and not shut each other down for being real, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you can kind of censor what you take in depending on how you're feeling as well, because I know how social media is. I'm in social media. I know that it's not real. However, if I'm feeling a bit rubbish about myself, if I'm tired, if I'm grumpy, if I'm due on my period, I know that a little scroll on Instagram will trigger me, because a lot of my Instagram is the pretty houses, the cleaning accounts, the organization accounts, because I love all that stuff. But I know that if I start scrolling that, when I'm in one of those moods, I will start to feel I'm not good enough. My house is a shit tip. Like, because I look at my house and there's stuff everywhere. I haven't hoovered in a couple of days. There's just clutter. And then I look at these accounts and I'm just like, how do they look so perfect? But actually, when I look at my house, when I'm in a good mood, I'm like, oh, it's fine. It's normal. But when I'm in like one of those kind of easily triggered moods, I'm like, oh, I need to sort my house out.
Absolutely. And the truth is as well, those people that do those accounts, I've seen a lot of them, thankfully, actually also getting a bit more real. So they'll post the beautiful, you know, scrolling picture of the dining room kitchen setup, but then sometimes they'll keep scrolling and turn around and there's just a room to the side that's just filled with all the crap that they've just pushed out of that room.
I've
and
seen
I really
them.
Appreciate it when they do that, because I think thank you for being realistic. And, you know, even if you do the beautiful organisation and interior stuff, I spent quite a lot of money recently on all of the acrylic tubs and things like that, you know, for the storage stuff. And it made it look really, I printed out little labels and I made a big medicine cabinet all with drawers, everything perfectly labeled. I got some spinny turntables for the cleaning products and spent a day doing it and it looked fantastic. But, you know, sure enough, after a couple of weeks, you've dumped a bunch of extra stuff on top of the drawers and in front of them, you know, something spilled. So now there's something sticky in the bottom of your lovely acrylic turntable. Even when you do actually apply yourself to, you know, doing all the pretty bits and pieces, life kicks in quite quickly.
And it does.
It's not really that maintainable. So, you know,
kind
of don't bother.
And I guess if these big accounts are doing it as a full-time job, then they are basically, in essence, being paid to keep their house tidy. Whereas, like, I have a job alongside being a mum as well. So I guess that kind of, if that makes anyone feel any better about their house.
Exactly. That's so important to remember. You know, I think a lot of the time the people that we're comparing ourselves to online are your, you know, motherhood influencers and content creators who, as you say, they do that for a living. So, you know, my job now is to wake up in the morning and make funny videos. That's my job. Either for just organically for the audience, or it's a, you know, a paid brand piece, but that's what I do for a living. I'm not going to sit in an office for 9 hours first and then coming down trying to do that on top. And equally, those that are doing the beautiful play ideas, the sensory trays, the ones that are doing the fantastic home cooked recipes, the ones that have the absolutely stunning playroom with vines climbing up the walls, and I actually just built a tree book house and stuff. Most of them are doing that as their job. That is what they get paid to do. Alongside that, there'll be mums as well. But you know, once you become a professional content creator, your whole day is doing that. So to compare yourself to other people that are they're being paid to do that is very unrealistic.
It's really unrealistic. Definitely. And I think it's important to remember as well that even those people will have their insecurities about other things that they're not doing. The ones with the beautiful houses and the cleaning stuff may feel triggered by the play accounts that do the beautiful tough trays and things because they're not doing that. So I think you just have to take everything with a pinch of salt and just look at it and know that it's not real, and just you do you, really.
Exactly. Yeah. We are all literally just muscling through, just trying our best. And, you know, if you manage to just stumble through the day, keep everybody alive and fed and healthy, then you're winning, really. You know, stop kicking yourself.
Although my daughter broke her toe on Saturday, so healthy maybe is not the one. I was like, how long am I gonna not have broken bones for in this house, because my son is wild. He is literally a wild child, and I was waiting for a bone to break, and I never ever thought that it would be my calm, quiet my daughter, and it was her. And I was like, how did this happen? So yeah,
we need one of those things on the wall with a number of days without injuries.
I know. Yeah, it wouldn't be very many with my son, because he's always got some sort of head injury or tooth gone through a lip or something. But yeah, I would have put my money on him breaking a bone first, but it was not him. So spent Saturday in A&E. So yeah, that was fun. Nearly missed this podcast today as well, because she was gonna have the week off school, but no, she's gone to school, so she has to put weight on it as normal, bless her.
poor thing.
But yeah, to today's episode, we are going to be spilling the tea on these parenting realities that we've already been speaking about. And rather than getting these from my audience, which is what I normally do, I've got them from your lovely reels, because your reels are just the epitome of the realities of motherhood. So I've gone through them and I've picked out the ones. I basically sat and scrolled, and the ones that I was like, oh my God, yes. I was like, yep, we'll have that one. We'll have that one. And it was most of them, to be honest.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. So the first one that made me die was if parents told the truth, and it was you with a painting like, oh yeah, well, that's shit.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that. It's so true, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and I'm not that honest with my daughter, but I do kind of believe in being a bit honest with them about this stuff.
Yeah.
And pictures is a really good example. We went out for some brunch yesterday for my birthday, and she was doing some colouring, and at the end said, "Oh, what do you think? Do you like it?" And she just scribbled all over it and gone outside the lines, and I just went, well, it's not your best work, darling. You know, you've got your are much better than that. And I always feel like I saw a really good reel recently where the woman was showing up actually a really good rainbow painting that her child had done, and she was saying, she's just gone off to the toilet, but when she comes back, we're going to discuss, and I'm not going to tell her how amazing it is. Mm. I'm going to ask her questions about it instead and say, what inspired you to do this? And who is this here? And get them to talk about their creation. Mm. And I really liked that approach.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wouldn't, obviously it was a joke in the reel doing that. Oh, wow, that is shit. I'm just going to pop that up on the fridge until you've forgotten about it, at which point I can throw it away.
Yeah.
You know, I do think we can find that balance of being complimentary, but, you know, not just over praising the end result, especially if it is a bit shit.
Yeah. I'm literally terrible for that because I think, for time reasons, a lack of time, I guess, I just am like, oh yeah, that's amazing, cool.
Yes,
because I think it would take longer to be like, oh yeah, what inspired you? But I do need to do that. I've seen those reels and I really want to do that as well, but I'm terrible for just being like, yeah, that's amazing. You can see my fridge behind me with said paintings that are waiting to go in the recycling bin.
Yeah, absolutely.
My son came home from school with one the other day. He's not a crafty person. Right. It had one piece of tissue paper stuck on it. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. Good job.
Yeah. Great. Good effort. Good effort. You can see that you tried here to do something.
Yeah.
No, I think you've got to be realistic with the praise. You know, you can't expect to do a full artistic review with every single piece of crap that they bring you. But
yeah,
and add to that the number of things that they just want you to watch or look at throughout the day. Oh. You know, I think we all enter that zone of great, good job.
Yeah.
You know, but every now and then just sort of do a little bit more of a critique, I think. And
yeah, definitely.
You know. I'm a big one as well for not for sort of one of my worst things as an adult in terms of the way that I work is I'm a total perfectionist and it's all about the end result. And I often just stress throughout the process thinking I've got to get this done and it's got to be perfect and it's all about the end result. And there's a method of teaching with kids where they say don't focus on the end result. If anything, the end result is nothing. And they actually even encourage you don't put stuff up on the walls and things like that. The bit that we're focusing on is the enjoyment of the process. And I guess you can encourage that a bit by, you know, asking questions like, oh, so what inspired you to do that, or who's this here, and why did you use these colors or these techniques or whatever. And
as I say
to an extent, like we can't all do that all day.
No,
I do quite like that approach.
Yeah, I love that. I think I definitely need to do that with my daughter. She's inheriting my perfectionism ways. And when we were in the hospital the other day, they had one of those pads that you could write on and erase it, kind of like an etch-a-sketch, but similar. And we were practicing her writing. She was writing words and she'd get to like the fifth or sixth word and would make a mistake. And rather than just putting a line through it and continuing, she would erase the entire page and start again. And I'm like, no, because that's the kind of thing that I used to do and I still do, but I don't want you to do it. So I'm trying to teach her to just, you know, be able to put a line through it and continue, or to make mistakes, and it's okay. We're not there yet, though.
No, exactly. And it's one of those, you know, trying to get over your own... I wouldn't call it a trauma necessarily, but bad habits, I think,
and
we certainly grew up in a time where it was all about the end result. It was, you know, what a beautiful picture. Everything was all up on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like there was that much focus on the process.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I'm a stressor. I'm a worrier. I suffer with anxiety on and off as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of that is because I find it quite difficult to just enjoy the process of anything I'm doing. So if we can help our kids get over that among the many other traumas and bad habits we've picked up over the years, then all the better for them, really.
It's a minefield, isn't it? I'm constantly like looking at the way I'm parenting my child and I'm like, oh God, am I putting my child into therapy just like I've needed therapy? Like, oh, what's happening?
But how great to be a part of that generation that's doing that. I don't really feel like our parents were really that fussed on that.
No.
Maybe they were, I don't know.
No,
we should ask them perhaps. But, you know, we are, half of the content that I consume on Instagram is all about responsive parenting, you know, gentle parenting, overcoming your own childhood trauma, trying not to pass on. And that is a huge challenge when you're not only trying to bring up your child in the best possible way, but also at the same time, recover from all of these terrible bad habits that we've got ingrained as well.
Yeah.
And it's really challenging. And, you know, it's a big source for mum guilt because, you know, we'll lose our temper, for example, or we'll behave in a way that absolutely is not gentle parenting.
Yeah.
And you spend the whole evening afterwards absolutely kicking yourself because you failed. But we've got to remember that we're human beings as well, and we're trying to repair ourselves at the same time as bringing up gentle, kind, empathetic human beings. And it's a lot. So I think we need to just be a little bit forgiving of ourselves, you know.
It is honestly, gentle parenting or responsive parenting, whatever you want to call it, is the hardest thing for me, because I've got ADHD, so I struggle to regulate my emotions as it is. And that's without a child, as you said, incessantly talking in my ear or watch this, do this, do that. And now I've got a second child who has found his voice in the last couple of months, and he's now also incessantly talking. And I'm like, ah. And then there'll be the dishwasher making a noise or the TV's really loud. And then my husband will come home and want a kiss. And I'm like, stop touching me. Go away. But you're trying to be gentle whilst also dealing with the inability to regulate your own emotions.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like I've got like an atomic bomb inside me and I'm trying to diffuse it whilst also trying to be kind to my children. And I'm like, I'm going to explode in a minute, and just walk into the bedroom, scream into a pillow and come back. And I'm like, okay, we're good. But it is really tough.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. Like, overstimulation is a huge, huge thing. And it's something that I thought that not only I was experiencing, but I thought it was not something that everyone was experiencing. But I've talked about that a few times in my reels. And so many people have said, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. You know, noise overstimulation in particular. Because it only takes, for me, if there's anything more than two to three different sources of sound happening at the same time, particularly if those sources are clashing, so music from two different places for me, and the tones are clashing, is a real stress trigger. So if you imagine just a normal family kitchen, you got the TV on, then somebody might be playing a game on an iPhone or an iPad or something. And then, as you said, my partner will come in, he watches YouTube stuff all the time. So there's another source. And then it's mummy watch at the same time. And then a toy will start going, you know, that bus thing that everybody's got that sings all sorts of different songs and things.
Yeah.
And it, for me, I can feel that stress bubbling up.
Yeah.
And then somebody says, mummy, like that. Yeah. And it's so hard not to go, what? And just,
what
you know,
the fuck do you want?
Exactly, yeah. To go, yes, darling, how can I can see you're having some big feelings right now, you know. I'm having some big feelings right now, you know. I'm trying to get a lid on my big feelings right now.
Yeah.
And I do sometimes, again, I think it's really important to be honest about that with everybody around you, including your children. And you know, I've actually said to Lula's really smart, and she's very, very articulate, and she understands a lot, which helps. So sometimes when I'm reaching that point of stress overwhelm, I'll take a big breath and I'll say, I'm feeling really stressed right now. And I'll name the reasons why. I'll say, there's too much noise happening. I'm trying to focus on getting this thing done. You are obviously needing a lot of things right now. There's a lot of screaming and shouting. Raffi's making this noise. For mummy, that kind of really makes me feel really stressed out. I really need your help. Here's how, or I'll even ask her, how do you think you could help me manage that better? And she feels, you know, obviously gives us such a sense of responsibility. And she often surprises me with this amazing empathy, saying, I tell you what, mummy, I'll help by, I'll just tidy up these things that you asked me to do. And I'm like, well, you know, tears threatening. It's almost sort of giving her the responsibility rather than allowing myself to bubble over and then go, right, everybody shut the fuck up. Trust in them to help you if they can, and then thank them. And the other thing is, as well, if you do boil over, apologize quickly and honestly. You know, anytime I do kind of lose my shit, I really try to make a point of saying, right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have shouted at you. There was a lot going on. Don't try to excuse it, but I'll say there was a lot going on and I was feeling really stressed, but I still shouldn't have shouted at you. That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
And how could I have done that better? Or how could I do that better next time? And Lula will say things like, You could take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
You could count to 10. You could tell us how you're feeling. And I was like, great ideas. Yeah, good. And she's obviously teaching herself at the same time. And yeah, when that, it doesn't always work that well. But when it does, it feels like, oh, yes, this is a parenting win moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, you managed to make that moment out of a moment where you were feeling really, really stressed and overstimulated.
I love that.
You've got to celebrate those wins when you get them, because they're few and far between sometimes.
Definitely. We call it in our house when we're feeling that like height of stress, we call it feeling a little bit frazzled. And I'm like, mummy's just feeling a little bit frazzled right now. And then Bella will try to help as well. And we do this thing where you blow out the candles. So you put your hand up and you take a deep breath and blow out a finger at a time. And I was feeling frazzled the other day. And sometimes when you are feeling frazzled, you forget all of the things that you should do to kind of help yourself get better. And Bella came up to me and she put her hand in front of me and I was like, what are you doing? And she was like, come on, mummy, blow out the candles. And I was like, oh, bless her. That's so cute that she's like, she's taken that on board and now she might be able to use that to help her regulate her emotions as well.
Absolutely. You've got a double win there in that she's showing you empathy. So you've managed to teach her empathy for others, but also she's learned a technique that she can use herself at the same time. That is a, that's a huge, huge win. And you're being honest and open with your kids about the fact that you are also a human. And my mum was absolutely brilliant. She was such a great mum, but she was never really open at all about her emotions. Anything that she was going through. She broke up with my dad when I was four, when I was Luda's age now, and never expressed anything, never cried in front of us, and never talked about how she was feeling. She just soldiered on every single day. And as a result of that, she was obviously doing it to protect us. You know, I don't need to share this stuff with my kids. This is, you know, private. But as a result, it has sort of given me a feeling of, to be a grown-up, to be a proper mum, you need to absolutely have a lid on all of your big emotions, all of your trauma, all of your shit, because it's not fair to put that on your kids. But I've completely changed my opinion on that now as an adult, and I think actually it's really helpful for you and for your children to be open and share this stuff with them. You know, trusting them enough to be able to handle these ideas and to take them on for themselves as well.
I think people even now still out there think that we shouldn't share our emotions with our children, though, because a few months ago, one of my videos went viral. I was like sobbing in front of my son. I can't even remember why. Something had happened and I was really upset. And he was really comforting me. And it was a really, really sweet moment of him showing empathy. And I was explaining to him what was the matter and all of this and saying thank you for him trying to comfort me. But I got a load of comments saying, like, you should absolutely not have done that in front of your son. You should have taken yourself away and, like, cried in the toilet. And I was like, but why? Then he never sees me cry. He never thinks that I'm a human being that feels emotions. And then he subsequently thinks that it's not okay for him to cry and will shut down all of his emotions. Me crying in front of him just shows him that I am a human being and that he can be too.
Absolutely. And gives him the opportunity to help you and to be empathetic with you as well.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. I mean, my mum died before my kids were born, sadly. And obviously I have moments usually triggered by them when I look at them and think, oh my God, she would love you guys so much. Oh. And I'll just get a bit overwhelmed and I'll have a cry. And Lula will stop what she's doing and, oh, mummy, are you crying? Are you sad? And I said, yeah, I was just thinking about my mum and thinking how she would love you. She would think you were absolutely brilliant. And she comes up and gives me a cuddle and says, oh, I miss her too. And she never knew her, but she says, oh, I miss her too. I miss my grandma. And she makes up stories. She says things like, oh, yeah, no, I saw that when I was at my grandma's house. And it's like, okay. You've never been there, but yeah, fine. But yeah, I think it's, you know, and then when people protect kids from grief, you know, and then when family members die, it's this whole thing of, oh, how are we going to break it to them? But, you know, that's all a part of life as well. Sadness is a part of life. And if you're protecting your children from that all the time, you're not teaching them how to deal with that. I agree with you. I think it's important to express all emotions openly in front of your kids.
Definitely.
Whilst at the same time, as I say, being
it?
It does. Yeah, teaches them how to deal with it. And I think that sets you up for a healthier adult life, because you've been taught, as you say, that it's okay as well to express these emotions. And again, you know, it's part of being British, isn't it? We withhold our emotions. We don't want to burden anybody else with how we're feeling. It's not healthy to do that. I think it's a good thing to do with your kids, for sure.
Definitely. And now moving on to something completely away from that topic. When non-parents park in parent parking spaces, and I know that so many people will be like, oh my God, that does my head in, while they're listening to this, because I see reels about this all the time, about what people do and what people say. I had this once when my eldest was really young. Someone parked in there and I had nowhere to park, couldn't get her out. She was quite young, so I was still like kind of struggling a little bit, and I lost it with someone who parked in there. I was like, how do you expect people to get out of the car with their babies? And so she was very apologetic, and I did feel very bad afterwards for letting loose on her. But I was like, but why park there? I guess it's people that maybe haven't had kids and don't know how hard it is. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, good for you for speaking up, and good for her for reacting apologetically, because I think that's the reason a lot of us don't speak up, is because we don't want to end up in a car park brawl, which unfortunately is the way I think a lot of people would respond. They'd tell you to fuck off and mind your own business, basically. But I did a reel about it, and it was what I would like to say, and it was this tirade rant at the person for, you know, oh yes, I must about get your one invisible, of those invisible child. Children next time. That looks much easier to deal with. But then, you know, compare it to what I actually say, which is a tut and a head shake. You know, I never dare to say anything. And the comments underneath were amazing, because, I mean, the vast majority was other parents saying, oh, this is the biggest bugbear. I hate it. It drives me absolutely mad. Yeah. The people that were against it they didn't seem to really understand what the parent parking spaces were about. Yeah. So a lot of people were coming out with, oh, parents are so entitled. So lazy. It would do you good to walk across the car park from the other side of the car park, etc.
It's not about that. It's not.
No. And then lots of older people as well saying, oh, how did we manage in our day without parent toddler parking spaces? But the truth is, as you say, in a lot of car parks, you literally cannot get your child out and into their car seat safely, because you can't open the door wide enough because of the next car or whatever. Yeah. I mean, some do just about have enough space, but I've genuinely been in car parks where I've tried to open the door, and then therefore we've had to pull the car out, get the kids out while sitting in the middle of the road, and then I pull the car in afterwards.
But if you're on your own, that's a right faff, and like you're leaving a child out on the road, and it's just it doesn't work. But if it bothers people that much, stick the parent and child spaces at the back of the car park, or on the top level of the car park. Like, it doesn't matter where they are, we just need bigger spaces. Exactly. And that's what I think people don't understand. They think that we want them because it's closer to the shop. That's not the case at all.
No, it's not about proximity. I would be very happy having them on the far, far side of the car park, as long as there was a safe walkway. Because the other thing to remember is, especially if you've got a toddler and a baby, is you push in the pram and then toddler who's inevitably trying to run off and whatever else, with cars moving around all over the place. And, you know, the older people that comment on it saying, oh, well, we coped fine in our day. Well, there's a lot more traffic on the roads now, and cars are a lot bigger.
Cars are wider,
Yeah, and car seats are a lot bigger as well. You know, when I was a kid, it was like a booster seat, and he didn't even have to wear a seatbelt. I was around when that law came in.
Yeah.
And that's old.
But also the back in my day argument does my freaking head in, no matter what you apply it to, because things are different now. So stop applying back in my day to everything.
Very helpful, Brenda, but you know, life has changed. We've moved on 40-50 years since then, so
I love that you use Brenda and not Karen, because usually the Karens, I feel sorry for the Karens,
cause... I really feel sorry for people whose name is actually Karen. I just think I'd be gutted if that was my name.
I know. Yeah. I met a really nice Karen the other day and I felt really bad that she was called Karen because she's going to get called a Karen all the time now.
Yeah, if you were called Karen, you'd absolutely have to avoid ever getting the wedge haircut, wouldn't you?
Complaining in a restaurant or anything like that, because you'd just get called a Karen, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, Karens.
Bless them. Karens. Bless the Karens.
We hear you. We see you.
We see you, Karens.
Yeah. What's another one? Getting a drink for your newborn versus your toddler. This one cracked me up because... Yeah. It's not only newborn versus toddler, it's also like first and second born, because I think it just like the amount you sterilize just kind of, I wonder what it would be like for me if I ended up having like five children, what the fifth would deal
just
with.
Slacker and slacker as you go on, honestly. And it's across the board, you know. The reel, if anybody hasn't seen it, is just getting the bottles out of the sterilizer with your newborn and using the little tweezers that come with it and everything, and almost a face mask on, and you know, rubber gloves and everything. Once they're a toddler, you sort of find a sippy cup down the back of the sofa and give it a quick sniff and think, yeah, that's fine, and hand it over. But you're right, absolutely, it's the same with child one and child two as well. And across the board, not just in terms of sterilization, but accuracy with everything, you know. Mine are both formula fed because I wasn't able to breastfeed, and first time round, you know, you're using that level to make sure all the scoops are perfectly level and all the rest of it. Second time round, you're almost tip the tin in and just get that'll do it, it's fine, bosh,
close enough,
there you go, it's fine. You just get slacker and slacker with each one, don't you? But you also realize that that's fine.
Yeah, like dropping dummies on the floor with my first. It was like, oh, got to sterilize that one now. So I'd always have like six dummies with me that were sterilized, so that if I dropped one, I wouldn't give her that one back. I would give her a fresh one. But with my son, I'd just be like, oh, never mind. Just rub the dirt off, put it in my mouth to clean it a little bit, stick it in his chops.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, God. And if you ever share that one on social media, people jump on you for that. The safety crew on social media are hot. They're on it, you know, all of those things, sterilization, car seats, you know, all of that stuff. If you accidentally show something slightly wrong, I think you should find blah, blah, blah.
I know. I saw a post the other day, actually. Who was it? It was someone that had been on Love Island and is now a mum, and she shares like the realities of mum life now. And she had put her child in the front seat of the car, in a car seat, which is legal in the UK if you turn the airbags off. Oh my God, the amount of abuse in the comments section that there was, even though it's completely legal and acceptable to do that. And I was like, dear, oh dear, God forbid we should accidentally like put a foot actually out of line and post it on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nerve-wracking. Anytime I do anything in the car, I'm sort of any filming in the car, I'm kind of double, triple checking, like, now, are all the seats perfectly up to code? Is everyone facing the right direction? Are all the seat belts at shoulder height, etc.? And to be fair, you know, it was a long time ago, I did one reel, and to be fair, I did have the headrest too high for my daughter, and therefore the straps were too high. The comments were a bit overdramatic. It was like, so terrifying to see this, you know. And I thought, crikey, it's about an inch too high. To be fair to them, it did make me look it up, and I found out, oh, I have got that wrong, and adjusted it. And I think I put out a story at the time as well, saying, oh, just in response to some of the comments, you know, I have just got my apologies, I did have it wrong. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. I fixed it now. For anybody else that wants to get the information on car seat safety, here's the link to the recommended Facebook group. So I thought I can use it as a way to help everybody learn a bit. But people
there's
are
a way of saying it though, right? It's terrifying. Yeah, it's so terrifying. Oh my God. I know. Yeah. Just the whole mum police vibe on Instagram can be a bit much. Like I was saying, I think it was with Louise actually on that podcast that I couldn't breastfeed either. I did breastfeed for 4 months and 6 months, to the detriment of my mental health and the happiness of my babies, because I felt the pressure to do so. But when I actually stopped breastfeeding because of my sanity and the happiness of my babies, I did a post about it, and mm-hmm. the mum police came at me saying, you haven't tried hard enough. You haven't tried this. You haven't tried that. You should be expressing because breast is best. Breast is the only way. And I just thought, hold on a second. You've not walked a single minute in my shoes. You have no idea what I've been through, what I'm going through. Who are you to tell me how I should be parenting my child?
I mean, this is the upside and the downside of social media and parenting through social media in particular, isn't it? You know, it can be a real support network, especially if you don't have a great physical, you know, support network around you.
Yeah.
You can go on and really build some great communities. I've got made some fantastic friends through my channel, and it does feel like a real supportive mum group. But on the other side of it, the other side of the coin is, you will get picked up and slated for every single thing that you do. Mm-hmm. And that's across the board. You know, it could be something, as you say, as simple as putting a dummy in your mouth before you put it in your baby's mouth. Mm. It can be much bigger than that, like breastfeeding, for example. You know, I've had that same comment as well. Anytime I've done a reel where it's featured a baby's bottle, and people have said, I did one as well that was, comparing the newborns with toddlers, which one's harder. And made it clear in the caption, this is based on my experience. I fully understand other people that have had, you know, really colicky babies and really difficult newborn stages will be completely the other way around. And that's fine. Let's talk about that in the comments. But people will see the bottle and they'll say, oh, well, no wonder you found it easy. You know, you weren't breastfeeding. And it's like, I wrote a blog about it for that reason. Explaining the reason that I can't breastfeed. I actually had a deformity that I've had sort of fixed cosmetically. But physically, I cannot do it. I was able to produce a little bit of milk, but nowhere near enough to actually feed the children. So I did all the colostrum and syringing and that business, and I breastfed as much as I possibly could. But after, I mean, we're talking within a few days, you can see the baby's getting really frustrated and really hungry. And I've tried expressing, and you can see from how much comes out. It's dribbles. It's nowhere near enough. So when people say like, oh, well, it's because you didn't breastfeed, so therefore you had it easy, I just feel like saying, not everybody can. And even if you can, but then weren't able to sustain it, or, you know, it was just really damaging your mental health. You know, I've spoken to people that have tried soldiering through while their nipples almost hanging off. And people are saying, oh, well, you've just not got the latch right, and you know, you're just doing it wrong, and that's the problem. And they're, you know, bleeding, and just the trauma and the pain. And we push ourselves to do it more because of these opinions of other people. And you know, that applies across the board in any sort of parenting philosophy that I talk about in any of my reels. You always get somebody coming out saying, oh, yeah, you've done it wrong.
It's not just parenting philosophies, though. I posted a video, nothing to do with parenting. It was a funny video of my daughter, and she was organising her books whilst also talking to me about how cross she was because we didn't have any cheese. And it was just funny. And most of the comments were positive, but there was this one comment, and I just laughed because I was like, there is absolutely no way anyone control me on this post, because it's just Bella talking about cheese. And this one woman was like, oh, I really hope that you've got her more than just Peppa Pig books, because we're really commercialising children's reading these days. And I just thought, do you know what? I was just talking to my husband about how great it is that there's no trolls on this post. And then your comment pops up, and I'm just laughing at the fact that somehow someone has managed to troll me about my daughter organizing her Peppa Pig books. But actually, so many people have gone to town on that woman without me mentioning anything.
I love that. That's my favorite thing. I used to find it very difficult to not just write a huge great long paragraph in response to people picking, because as you say, you can do something about something that you think, right, there's no way anyone can be offended by this. This is clearly a joke, we're having a laugh about something. But it, as I say, it's usually when it goes viral and it goes into the millions, then someone will find a way to get offended by it. But yeah, I used to go to town on people like actually and start arguing with them. And then it would stress me out and I'd be feeling anxious all day thinking I need to go back and see if they've said something else or I can say something. And what I found, same as you, was actually if I don't respond, my fantastic followers come and absolutely pull them to shreds. And I come back on later and just read all the comments and think, yes, go team, come on.
Yeah, it's quite nice, isn't it? And then you just have to sit there and watch it and you're like, cool, I don't have to do anything here. It's all, all sorted for me.
My favourite thing as well is when, you know, people are just responding saying, oh my God, it's a joke. Mm. Just calm the fuck down. You know, it's a joke.
I know.
But sometimes, you know, I will do things that and like the nursery fees one that I did, sort of doing it was tongue in cheek. And obviously there's a jokey suggestion in there that parents shouldn't be charged when their kids are off sick. So I don't actually think that's the case. You know, most nursery businesses would close if they gave you your money back each time. The
real kids itself are always sick.
Always sick, exactly. Yeah. So I understand that's not a practical suggestion. The aim of the reel was just to talk about the frustration that parents feel when they're giving up 2/3 of their salary and then their kid doesn't even get to go and use the childcare. And you're off work as well, so you can't. That was what it was about. But, you know, people start picking up on the specific, actually, and I love it when people just respond saying, oh, it's a joke, calm down, it's meant to be funny.
I know. I feel like some people just, I mean, don't have a sense of humour or don't understand a very, like, dry British sense of humour. Because quite a lot of the time I post stuff that's quite tongue-in-cheek and just very dry and people just don't get it. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake, have a sense of humour, will you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Again, yeah, it's when it tends to be when they go viral and then you start reaching that international community. I've got quite a lot of followers in the States and unfortunately most of them get it and also find it. They enjoy the British sense of humour. But if people do start getting offended, it tends to be people stateside that you know, perhaps don't quite get the British sense of humour. And you sort of politely try to say, all right, yeah, interesting comments, but you know, it's a joke, calm down. And that's always it's always a relief.
Okie dokie, so on to the next one. I think this will be our last one, but it's a big one, and I know so many people will be like screaming at their headphones right now. Just you wait until. Oh, I bloody hate that saying.
Yeah, I mean, it all ties into the being dismissed thing, doesn't it? And it's something I noticed with speaking to friends who had older kids when Lula was a baby. And, you know, you start sort of sharing the challenges that you're facing and you're just immediately met with, oh, well, just wait till they're teenagers. Then you'll know, you know, then you'll know challenges. And it's so... it's so dismissive of that person's experience. And actually you're in a really valuable position as a parent of an older child to be able to say, oh yeah, I remember that well. And it helped maybe offer some solutions that helped you to get through it. There may not be any solutions, but you might just be able to say, look, it will pass. Just you know, you're in the grind right now, but just keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep telling yourself, this too shall pass, this too shall pass. You know, and just be empathetic. And if you've got something to say about just you wait until, or something about your child, just acknowledge theirs first. I think, you know, just say, wow, I hear you, that's really tough. I remember that phase too. We got through it with this. Hey, if it's any consolation, you're about to reach an easier stage with X, Y, and Z, but just you wait till they're teenagers, you know, and add it on the end rather than just responding immediately with, oh, you think you've got it hard. This is so much harder.
It's the whole, like, you think you've got it hard, I've got it harder thing, because I get that all the time, especially when I only had one child and I was sharing the challenges of one child. I would always get, oh, but I've got this many children, so it's harder. Or like, my friend's got twins, so think how much harder that would be. And it's like, okay, yes, it's hard, but it's hard for me too. Yes. And I think that's what we just need to remember when we're kind of sharing our challenges.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and yes, it will be more challenging for some people than others, but that doesn't mean that your challenges that you're facing are not as valid. You know, for sure, if you've got a friend that's got newborn triplets, she's probably having a slightly tougher time than you are with your one baby. However, that doesn't mean that, you know, everything that you're going through with the one baby should be easy. And I think it's just, you know, it's really important for us as mums and as a mum community to just hear each other, you know, just offer that empathy. Don't immediately try to one up each other all the time. Yeah. And that's in negatives and positives. You know, I think we have a habit sometimes of doing that with the positives as well. Oh, my little girl's just started reading. Oh, well, my can do this. Or mine's walking already. Mine's sitting up. You know, it's that Bluey episode of the baby race, isn't it?
Baby race. I love that one.
But I think we do it with negatives as well. You know, I only had 6 hours sleep last night. Of course, 6 hours. I had 3.5. I only got 2.
Yeah.
You know, I had negative hours of sleep, and it's like, it's not a competition. Yeah. Just, you know.
I definitely still do that with my husband, though. He'll be like, oh, I'm so tired. Yeah. I only had 6 hours sleep. And I'll be like, well, I only had 4. So. Yeah. I'm like, I really need to stop doing that. But also, I want to have a nap. So yes.
That's why we do it with our partners, I think, is because you feel like you're almost trying to, you know, it's almost like when you have a job in an office and you start trying to lay the groundwork of, I'm going to pull a sickie tomorrow, but I just about midday the day before go, oh, a little bit of a tickle in the throat here. I hope it's nothing infectious, you know, ready, lining yourself up, ready for that day off. And I think we do that with our partners as well, in that, you know, you start thinking about, I might try and get a nap later, or I might try and get them to do bedtimes tonight instead of me. Yeah. So you just need to lay the groundwork early on. If I'm so tired, I just kept waking up last night with this and that. And I did go and see the toddler when she woke up last night. Lay those foundations down, ready to say, Sue, tonight, do you think you could do the bath time? So we like to compete, don't we?
I think a lot of parenting, if you've got a partner that you're parenting with, is a lot of competition of like, who's done what, who's done this, who's done this many bedtimes this week, who's done this many. It can become a bit of a competition, can't it?
Absolutely can. And I mean, one of the most positive things for us as a couple, because it does, you know, as we all know, having kids puts a huge strain on our relationships. And one of the toughest things can be, I think, when one of you is the default parent, the stay-at-home parent, and the other one's going out to work. Because you automatically feel like both of you have got the bum deal. You know, the one going out to work thinks, well, you know, I'm out of the house all day. All the responsibility of the finances is on me. You get to just stay around in your pajamas, watch telly, chill out, have a coffee whenever you want. It looks fantastic. Oh, what did you do? Oh, you went to the park. Oh, you know, challenging. But the stay-at-home parent, as we all know all too well, feels like they've got the bum end of the deal, in that it's just pure chaos all day. But one of the most amazing and beneficial things for it in our relationship has been that we've both done both. So when we had Lula, I was the stay-at-home parent, and Darren was going out to work for sometimes 12 hours a day, and he was coming home and doing the, you know, spotting some dust under the sofa and say, God, you know, have you been at home all day? How have you not managed to run the Hoover around? Do I have to do all the work and then come home and clean as well? At which point I was about ready to, you know, strangle him. But we've switched now, and I'm the main breadwinner for the family now, and he is the main carer, and he knows all too well now how difficult it is to find time to also run the Hoover around and that kind of thing. And that level of understanding really increases cooperation, respect for each other, and reduces demands as well. You do, absolutely. I'm sure if most mums got to switch with their husbands, even just for a week or two, the level of understanding between in the couple would just skyrocket. Not everyone gets the opportunity to do it, but if you do, I would definitely recommend it.
They should do a reality TV show of that, like swap jobs for a month or something, just to kind of, and then debrief after on how they're how they're feeling. That would be amazing. But I think that's one of the one things that I'm grateful for in COVID, is that through COVID, my husband was furloughed and I work in intensive care. So
right.
I was one of the busiest people that there was in the country at that time. So I worked 24/7 pretty much. Mm. I was there all the time, took all of the overtime to try and help with staffing. And my husband was at home with the toddler at the time. And he was like, this is hard. Yeah. This is hard work. And I was like, can you remember this in a year's time when this is all over? Mm. And the tables turn back to how they are. And thankfully, he has remembered. Occasionally, I think he does forget and he will get in from work and, you know, sit with his feet up and kind of be like, what's for dinner? And I'm like, just you remember how it was back in COVID. But yeah, I think it is a really good idea for if you can at some point have the opportunity to swap, even if it's just for a weekend, like if the default parent was to go away for a weekend or something and leave the other person in charge of everything. And when I say that, I mean, don't pack a bag for them and lay all the clothes out and prepare the meals beforehand. Literally leave them to sort everything out so that they can figure out not only what it's like to actually physically care for the children, but actually have the mental load as well of packing the bags, of getting the outfits ready, sorting the dinners, all of the stuff. Because even with a weekend, they'll never still fully get the mental load because they're not replying to school emails or having to remember a gazillion and one things throughout the week. But they'll have a rough idea of what you have to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, any opportunity that you get to do that, I would definitely recommend it. I mean, I think naturally women, mums, we do just tend to naturally take on the mental load anyway. I don't know why we do that.
I think we must just be wired to.
Like, right.
It must just be like an inherent thing. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, the closer to 50% you can get in terms of your parenting balance, the better for sure. We are pretty much at 50-50 now, I would say. And it's been incredibly beneficial for us as a family. And, you know, people always chuck out this line of working two jobs, you know, the person that goes out and works when they come home to then be handed the kids. It's sort of, well, I've done my job for the day. I don't want to now do another job for the day. But it's not really about the number of jobs. It's about the number of hours that you're putting in. And whoever stayed at home with the kids, they put in the same number of hours as you did because it's relentless. Yeah. I mean, yes, you might get a nap time or something, but other than that, it is relentless. And the whole day is serving someone else's needs as well, which is exhausting. Yeah. You hear a lot of parents say that when they go back to work, work feels like a holiday. Because it's a mental holiday, isn't it? It's right now I can focus on my thing that I'm doing and I can get on with whatever I'm doing. Whereas when you're with the kids, it's you're constantly trying to think your thoughts and their thoughts and the whole family's thoughts all the time. Yeah. It's mentally exhausting.
I always joke about because I work in intensive care, which is a very like it's an intense environment and I can have a very sick patient who's maybe like having a cardiac arrest or something and I'm doing CPR for 40 minutes and you know having to deal with a very unstable patient after that and it's still a break from parenting and I always joke about the fact that going to work is a nice little break because I get my 30 minutes break where I get to sit and have a hot cup of tea and a hot meal and I get to sit on my computer desk and do all of my documentation and actually sit and think straight. And I don't have someone in my ear all the time.
Yeah.
So who'd have thought that critical care would be a break from children?
Yeah, if anything, I would have thought that would be one of the jobs that would not give you that mental break. But
no, it still is.
it's the mental space, isn't it? You know, it's not that even if you do a really physically demanding job, it's allowing your brain to just be able to think its own thoughts and you know what a child will do especially once they start talking is they just invade that thought stream at every opportunity particularly the chatty ones. Lula is very very chatty. I don't know where she gets that from. she is mini me. I phrased it when I was a kid. I said to my dad, daddy, do you think I'm chattative? And he's yes, quite chattative. And this is karma coming back to kick me in the arse now with Lula because she doesn't stop talking all day.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. Yeah. She's got, you know, a lot of the time she has very interesting and wonderful questions to ask. And then a lot of the time she just wants to show you something she's got on her finger. You know, it's like, okay, thanks very much for interrupting my thought stream to show me your fingernail there. You know, I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I feel you. I have a chattative 5-year-old and she doesn't stop talking, but I also I think she's got ADHD as well. Mm. So I think it's very much a case of like just her talking whatever's in her brain. Yeah. And yeah, I'm just gonna have to let her do that, because if she has to keep it all inside, if she does have to mask the ADHD, that's what I don't want her to do. I want her to be able to get it all out of her brain, because otherwise you just end up with all sorts of issues later in life, which I'm now having to deal with. So I let her talk, but it is a lot of talking.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Especially if you're also ADHD or even just, you know, not ADHD, but just suffering with the massive overstimulation of just being a parent. Somebody else's thought stream. I did a series a while ago of just, you know, if adults were as unreasonable as toddlers. just stuff like that. I just found myself so often just thinking, can you imagine if you were hanging around a fellow adult doing this? You know, just somebody lived in your house and just did not stop talking all day. Can you imagine how you would react to that?
Yeah, you'd make them move out, wouldn't you?
Exactly. But
that's another thing with work, is that you like going to work is also kind of taking you away from that, like someone talking to you all the time, and it's giving you that adult, I don't know how to explain it, that adult mindset than anything, thought space. And it's your time away, and it's your sense of self. So you've trained to do this job, you enjoy this job, hopefully. And at home, it sounds terrible, as much as you love them kids, but it can almost be a bit mind numbing because you're not having to think really. And it's just constant barrage of like, watch, do this, watch, help me with this, help me with this. You're not having to apply yourself to anything. You're just there.
Yes, exactly.
Like listening to all this talking.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the interest of sort of being honest with your kids, I do actually say to Lula, I just need a little bit of thought space right now, darling. I just need to think my thoughts. And she sort of asked me what I mean by that. And I said, well, you know, when you're trying to figure something out, maybe you're doing a bit of your colouring or you're doing a bit of your writing practice or whatever, and you need to use your brain, don't need to think of things. Can you imagine if I was next to you the whole time going, Lula, 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 what do you think about this? Have a look at this. Have a look at this. What do you think? How would that make you feel? And she said, I would probably find it quite difficult to concentrate. And I said, and it's okay. You've got a lot to say. That's all right. But sometimes you have to understand that. See, people just need to be able to just use their own brains for a minute.
I might do that to Bella one day, actually. I might do to her what she does to me. She's trying to do her homework. I might just be like, Bella, 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 watch, Bella, watch, Bella, watch.
Exactly.
And then like I might say, can you pass my drink? And then she'll pass it to me, and then I'll throw it on the floor and be like, not that one, I wanted the other one.
Exactly. Give them a little taste of their own medicine if they're able to handle it and understand it. I think it's
they'd probably just laugh at me and think I was an idiot.
They probably think it was hilarious. Do it again, mummy. Yeah, brilliant.
Oh dear. Right, on that note, it has been amazing having you. Could you please tell all of my listeners where we can find you on social media?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. I am just at my kind of mum on all of them. So on TikTok, Facebook and Instagram, I am at my kind of mum. I am on YouTube as well, but I haven't really used it that much, but must invest in YouTube a bit more. But my kind of mum.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for listening. As always, could you please subscribe, download and leave a review? And I would absolutely love it if you could share my podcast with your friends. I'll see you for the next episode.